I guess you haven't had to worry about the heat so much since the last AMA. I'm definitely interested in one-to-one sessions. Have you thought about coaching? How has the PRS / performance royalties versus MCPS / mechanical royalties been split between the artist and the label / publisher in your experience? Would you like it if Mac OS became more like Windows? What would be your advice to bring in new clients? What is, in your opinion, the best way to let other people know you exist, especially during our COVID time? Do you use mid-side processing and when? Hey guys, and welcome to the Kane Audio Vlog. It is Friday. It's time for another Ask Me Anything. Usual rules apply. Comment anything you want below this video and I'll get back to you in next week's video. Before I look at last week's video, is there any house admin? There definitely is. Two things I want to mention. First of all, I have been trying to build an online shop for 5302. So if you go to 5302.co.uk/shop, you should see, in fact, I've got it open in a tab here. There's a tote bag, drawstring bag, a couple of t-shirts, coasters, mouse mat, basic stuff, a mug. And I've put a couple of the different designs. So the t-shirts have the tag design. And there's a few others. Go have a look. Hopefully that is all working. Who knows? So if anyone does go there and has any problems, then please do let me know. Second main bit of news. My screen is really damn bright. There we go. Kickstarter. Thank you to anyone who subscribes to this channel and watched the video yesterday. I did upload a short video on my Kickstarter campaign. I don't really know what to say. I'm blown away, to be honest. That's the first thing I've got to say. It's been up not even 24 hours yet, and I've hit half of the goal. I'm halfway there already. Thank you to everyone that's backed this project. For those of you that don't know what the hell I'm talking about, I put together a small Kickstarter campaign. Basically, I think everyone knows I'm putting out my album on my 5302 label as the first release in September. Pretty much anyone who watches this channel on a regular basis will know that. So I thought I'd quite like to, as it's the first release on a new label, plus it's my first album and it's my album, I figured it'd be quite nice to get some CDs pressed. And when I started looking into getting CDs done in a self-release kind of way, there's hundreds of companies out there that offer what they call CD duplication, which is basically just copying CDRs and a terrible print quality and whatever. And I know I've got, from back in my days of DJing, I've got cases of CDRs where, you know, I'd use those for music at gigs. And after a while, you know, after, I don't know, 5-6 years or so, the peel, the lacquer starts peeling off the back of the CD. And I do have cases of CDs that are just bits falling off and whatever. So that was kind of the last thing I wanted when it came to my album. So I had to kind of research, well, what's the difference with a shop bought CD and why doesn't that happen with them? And so it turns out it's all about the Glassmaster, basically. So I thought, right, well, that's what I want. Clearly, if I'm going to be doing, you know, a few copies of my album on physical format, I want a good quality that will last. Turns out it's not cheap. So I've set the goal, because I ummed and ahed for ages. Well, do I do a Kickstarter or don't I? Will anyone even want to back a campaign? Isn't that really selfish because it's my album? So I don't know, I kind of ummed and hard and went through all the usual mental torture, and I kind of set the goal at 400 because I thought, well, I mean, that's not even going to touch the sides of the cost of getting it pressed, but I figured it'll at least sort of give me a good idea of where I am. So yeah, so it's an all or nothing campaign with Kickstarter. If I don't hit the 400, then I don't get any of it, and that's the way it is. So yeah, so thank you to everyone who's backed so far. Like I say, I set the goal of 400. We're at 213 already, and it's just under 24 hours. So I'm honestly blown away. I wasn't expecting that kind of reaction so quickly. So yeah, thank you very much to those of you who have backed. Anyone who hasn't backed, you are more than welcome to back. So the way I've done it is basically you can pledge whatever you want, basically, but you can, if you pledge £5 or more, you get the album as an MP3 download, and I'll throw in a bonus track as well. I'll also be throwing in the booklet. So I've my album is based on a story that I kind of made up in my head. It's only, you know, a few sentences per track of just a rough scene. It's not a book or anything. Yeah, that's at the minute. I've designed the CD case and everything like that, and the cover, and a little mini booklet with those few sentences per track written in. So again, that'll be part of the physical CD. It'll be in the CD case itself. But anyone who pledges through Kickstarter will get that as part of the digital download as well. I'll send a digital copy of that as well. As far as I'm aware, there's no way of adding those things to things like iTunes, Spotify, Beatport, whatever. So I think it's fairly safe to say that that will be pretty much an exclusive thing for whoever backs these the Kickstarter campaign. You know, look, at the end of the day, I'm not under any false illusions that, you know, it's suddenly going to become a global selling album. It's not going to. It's a niche market that I have, at the very least. So and one I'm very proud of. So yeah, thank you very much to everyone involved so far. Right, that was a great big long waffle, and I apologize because I'm gonna guess that most people watching this video right now already know everything I've just said, so my apologies, but screw you, it's my video. Right, looking at last week's video, let's see what questions we've got this week. Starting at the top, Cavakay. Hi, Dom. I hope you had a good week. Test, high five. I guess you haven't had to worry about the heat so much since the last AMA. No, I haven't. It's been a bit weird. It's been like 12 degrees, something like that. In fact, I tested the underfloor heating the other day. I've sort of set up a schedule on it and everything now. It works. It doesn't seem very cheap. It seems quite expensive to heat up. But that was in the first couple of teething days, so I think it might have, it seems to have come down since. So I don't know what that was about. It might just be everything settling. But one thing I will say is also quite slow at warming up, which I've never had underfloor heating. I don't know how quick it's supposed to be. But I kind of thought it'd be a bit quicker, to be honest. But yeah, so I set it to come on, and I think it took, because it was a bit cold outside, it wasn't, I mean, it's still summer, but it was below average outside, and yeah, it took probably two and a half hours to reach temperature, but I'd set the temperature quite high just to test it all out, and it clicked off. And the temperature just carried on rising throughout the day. The floor wasn't hot, but the room was. So that shows that I've got something right in the insulation and everything, I think. So hopefully that's a good thing. And like I say, the temperature just carried on rising throughout the whole day then. And that's happened a few times this week where I've set the temperature to sort of go to 20 in the morning. And like right now it's 20.8. So the heating doesn't even need to kick in, but I know it's not 20 outside, so I think the sort of the general heat of the lights, the body heat, the computer, whatever's in here tends to maintain that heat quite well. So hopefully I'll be all right in the winter, but who knows? It's going to be a big test. The studio is looking good and sounding good too, judging by your voice last week. Much better than the week before. Thank you very much. That could be a microphone difference. This tends to pick up a shorter throw. The mic I was using was a shotgun mic, and I liked it because it just wasn't in the way. It was off camera, and it kind of made sense to use that, especially when I was in the back room of the house, because I didn't want to be, especially in such a small space, didn't want to be loading and unloading and whatever and setting things up every time I'm wanting to record a video. Whereas this, because it's a different desk and different space, I can still see the screen fully. I can see the room. I can see everything around me with a microphone in front of me. So it kind of makes more sense. So partly my voice improving will be down to the microphone being a better microphone. But yeah, that shotgun mic, it's not a cheap mic, the Rode VideoMic Pro, but it's certainly not my favourite mic, I'll be honest. I'm definitely interested in one-to-one sessions. Have you thought about coaching? I'm guessing that would probably mean a monthly or fortnightly half-hour or hour-long session, but at least that would be a regular income. Personally, I'd like to get help on whatever areas of focus will best help me finish more music. It's something I've thought about doing. As I probably alluded to earlier on, I struggle with mentally I've always struggled with imposter syndrome. For anyone that doesn't know what that is, I think all of us have it to some extent or another, but I've always kind of felt like I've scammed my way into the music industry and that I don't actually have any skill or talent, and that one day someone's going to find me out and someone's going to go, hang on, he doesn't know what sidechain is or something, and this guy's a phony. So when it comes to things like doing my tutorials that I enjoy doing in the videos, I kind of structure them as best as I can. Even then I'm still a bit wary of like, oh god, you know, is someone gonna go, oh, this guy's an idiot, why is he doing it this way? And I think with things like one-to-one sessions and coaching, I feel like to be a coach you kind of need a good but substantial sized ego, and I'm not sure if I have that. I'm not sure if I'm confident enough to do that, because what I wouldn't want to do is say, for example, we'd booked you in for, you know, an hour session today, and let's pretend we did it on Zoom or whatever, and you know, I sit there going, right, okay, what do you want to learn? And you say, oh, I want to learn about X, Y, and Z, and I'm like, oh, I don't even know what that is. I just feel like, well, that's a waste of time and money from everyone. So I don't know. So I'm sure I'm capable of these things. I just sometimes need to boot up the ass. So it's something I'm very aware of. It's something that lots of people have asked me for, and it's something that I would like to do at some stage. But I don't know how. I guess and the other thing I think for the difficult bit is scheduling these sorts of things, because it's not, for me, it wouldn't just be half an hour or an hour. It would be for whoever the person is on the other end. But for me, I would need to prep everything and make sure I'm kind of ahead of myself. And I would want a couple of your tracks, you know, if, for example, you know, to avoid the situation I just gave as a hypothetical example of where you ask, I want to learn about this, and I don't even know what that thing is. You know, I would want some advance warning of, well, what is it you're looking to do this week? And let's say, for example, you want to learn how to do a mixdown or something. You want to improve your mixdown on this track. Well, send me that track beforehand, and then we can, I can have a listen to it and I can make some notes. So that 1 hour phone call or Zoom call or whatever it is actually maybe 2 or 3 hours for me anyway. So I think there's a lot in terms of logistics in how I would do that. I think I would have to sort of schedule, like, you know, one day a week or a fortnight where I can blitz through everyone in one go, and then sort of the day before I can prep all of those things as well. So so there's a lot to consider, but it is definitely something I am considering, which is how I know about these problems I've just brought up. So it's on the cards, I guess. Watch this space. It is something I'd like to do. I'd like to be able to sort of help people on a more one-to-one basis, definitely. Personally, I'd like to get help on whatever areas of focus that best help me finish more music. Here's this week's question. How has the PRS/performance royalties versus MCPS/mechanical royalties been split between the artist and the label/publisher in your experience? Mechanicals are almost always 75% to the artist. Almost always. I think from experience, that's always been the case. PRS/performance royalties is really, it's kind of a debatable one. And I'll say this as an artist and as a human and as a record label as well, because I think there's a few little nuances in there. Today, you will find most record labels will want a cut of your performance royalties. And this has always been a bit of a bugbear for a lot of artists, particularly artists of my age and above. The reason being is because traditionally, you would, let's say, for example, you signed to Universal Records or Sony or whatever, you would then have a separate publishing deal with, it could be Universal Publishing or Sony BMG or whoever, but it would be an entirely separate publishing deal, and they were two separate businesses, and you didn't have to sign, just because you signed to Universal Records didn't mean you signed to Universal Publishing necessarily, but it was kind of an advantage if you did, because they all knew each other and they could work together and push campaigns, and it kind of made sense. So traditionally that was kind of the way, but there were a lot of people who would self-publish, and there are a lot of people who would set up their own publishing company, and there were lots of options. As the industry's kind of changed over the last decade, more and more record labels have realized that there's where money has shrunk or income has shrunk in direct sales. Income has potentially grown in publishing, so I think labels sort of cottoned on to that, and then they started pushing for, they'll sign 50% masters, 50% publishing, and I'm using that term specifically, 50%, because that's kind of what most labels have been doing, I think. However, I think that's kind of a bit of a sore point at the minute for a lot of artists, because, and I've said myself, probably in these videos, if you care to watch 111 hours of them, I've probably said somewhere, you know, don't sign your publishing to a record label without doing a little bit of research first and seeing, do they have a track record? Why are they wanting to sign your publishing, and what have they done with other artists publishing historically? I think it's really important that you do that, and I think it's also really important that some labels need to be able to offer two different contracts, and this is something I'm very aware of. So putting on my 5302 hat, it's something I'm very aware of, where I'm going to be pushing to take on publishing as well as masters. And the reason for that is because the whole 5302 brand, the whole business ethos, is pushing for streaming and synchronization to TV and film and things like that. So I hope that we'll be able to generate revenue for the artists by doing that, by taking on a percentage of publishing. Then it's in our interest to push for that. And I know that's traditionally been true for a lot of labels, and that's why I say look at their history, look at their track record, because I've signed lots of tracks to lots of labels of all shapes and sizes who have taken on publishing as well. And don't get me wrong, a lot of the time I've kind of gone, yeah, whatever, I don't care, take on the publishing, it's fine. But I would say right now 99% of those labels have done nothing with the publishing. Not one synchronization, not one advert, not one TV film, not one pitch, not one brief, not one anything. And to me, that's just a waste of everyone's time. I always feel like, well, why bother handing over your publishing to someone that's just not going to do anything with it? They need to be proactive, and there are lots of ways of doing that, and I'm not going to tell them all on these videos because that's exactly how I'm running my record label. So I want 5302 to have an advantage, but I feel like there are lots of ways of using your entire catalogue and pushing campaigns and working in the background of the music industry. And this is all very separate to the front end, let's call it, where you go out to a nightclub, you listen to a banger, and you're like, hey, this is an amazing track, I'm going to listen to it again tomorrow on Spotify or download it on Beatport or whatever the case. I think there's a whole back end, and that's where the publishing and mechanicals and everything lies. Mechanicals is really, so this is where it kind of gets a bit nitty gritty. Mechanicals is just, if you're pressing CDs or vinyl or whatever, then you have, that has to be licensed, because each physical product has to be accounted for, basically. So there will be a small license fee. With things like that, generally, and again with downloads, you technically Beatport will charge a mechanical fee for creating that MP3. For every copy that's downloaded or sold, there is a mechanical royalty. Generally for the last 15 years, that just kind of gets swallowed up in the abyss and nobody really notices it, unless you're selling jillions of copies, then it's not really going to get noticed. So so there we go. I think that's that. But yeah, generally mechanicals, you would look at 75% in your favour. Generally PRS, and again, this is tricky because actually if you signed to a publisher, they'd probably be only taking 20%, something like that. But again, it's an entirely different deal if you're signing to a publisher or self-publishing or signing the publishing to a label. They're very different deals. But each offers its own entirely different advantage. So, for example, if you sign to a publisher, then you have better access to maybe, let's say, other vocalists or more bands, or they'll have certain types of briefs come through on a regular basis. They'll have had a track record in a certain area of maybe TV or film or radio or live performance or whatever. And they'll gather royalties for that, and they'll have their strengths and weaknesses. And similarly for a record label, if they're a good record label that deals with publishing, then they'll have a track record in a particular area. And of course the difference is, if you sign to a publisher, sure, you're only giving them 20%, but you're giving them 20% of everything you ever write from then on in until the deal is done. With a record deal, you're only signing the publishing for that one track. So and then if you're self-publishing, which I recommend everyone does if they can, and learns it, because it's a good skill to have and can be quite lucrative as well. If you're self-publishing, then you get 100%, but sometimes that's 100% of nothing because you're kind of going into it blind. So what would you rather? 100% of nothing, 80% of something, or 50% of a lot. Yeah, that's generally how it works, I think. Yeah, I think. The bit about the distributor rep job last week took me back. I was the singles buyer at a high street record shop once upon a time. There we go. I had a pretty good ear for what would sell most of the time. But one rep sold me everything on her list the first time she visited because she flirted a tiny bit. The store manager wasn't pleased. That was an embarrassing lesson learned. I think I was about 19 at the time. Yeah, there we go. Something I omitted to mention in that is that I don't think I named this person. I'm now thinking of a specific person, a guy I used to live with, a flatmate, and I don't know if I even mentioned that in the last video, but if I didn't, then there's a clue. He used to be a flatmate, and if you're watching this, big ups. I remember his job was, obviously he wasn't probably the best flirt, but he did throw a good party, and yeah, would quite often go out on a Friday for a work do and wouldn't get back till Monday, let's put it that way, along with store managers and all the right people, the sales reps. If it wasn't flirting that was your skill, there was probably some white powder involved, I hate to say. But that's the old school music industry. It's kind of weird looking back at stuff like that now. It kind of felt like, yeah, that's how the music industry was. And it's really wrong. It shouldn't have ever been like that. But it was. And I'm very glad that the music industry is not like that now, if I'm honest. It's as much as sometimes it feels like the industry has become this big corporate thing, it's at least a bit clear cut, and I think that's probably a good thing. I'm just going to hit reset on the camera because I can see it looks like it's coming up to 30 minutes. I'm not even wearing my glasses, so I'll see you in a sec. And I'm back. So I've spent half an hour getting through one question. Sorry, guys. Not your human. Hey, Dom, hope you had a good weekend. This question is a touch weird. Would you like it if Mac OS became more like Windows? No more giant updates that break software and VSTs. I would like that, but I've never used Mac OS before. A good question. An interesting question. A strange question. I have used Windows and Mac OS a lot in my life. Back in the day, I started with Windows and stuck with Windows for an incredibly long time. When Mac went Intel, I got myself a MacBook because I went on tour. And I liked the look of the MacBook, to be honest. It was the first generation Intel MacBook. When was that? 2005-ish? And I quite quickly fell in love with Mac OS. It was incredible. Just the small things, like when you minimize a window, it would be animated and it would beautifully just flow down to the bottom of the screen. And I know that sounds silly, but those are the things that made Mac OS special and made the experience better. And if you had two computers side by side, one Mac, one Windows, and both of them were lagging and both of them were throttling themselves and both of them were terrible machines and both of them were struggling, and you minimized the windows on both of those machines, even if then it was a bit laggy and a bit blocky and a bit crappy, on Windows, it was just that, come on, just do it. Whereas at least in a Mac, and this is silly, I know, but in a Mac, because it was animated, it just wasn't stressful. Even if both machines were identically crap, for some reason, the way Mac OS was built, that it was more visually impressive and more visually appealing. For that reason alone, it just felt better. That's aside from the fact that Windows was kind of built on on a foundation that didn't need security. So security on Windows was always just slapped on the sides and sort of, you know, it was putting band-aids on burst pipes, whereas Mac was kind of built on a much more stable and solid foundation and base, and so it just kind of made more sense. So that aside, I traditionally as well, and this is the other thing, so I'm trying to be careful in what I say, because I know I'm going to come across like a Mac fanboy, but I'm really not. I was at one point, but I'm really not. They've pissed me off completely, so much so that I now own pretty much nothing Apple apart from my iMac. I used to have an iMac, a Mac Pro, a MacBook Pro, a MacBook, multiple iPhones, iPads, just everything was Apple because it all worked and it all was seamless and intuitive and brilliant and whatever. I have now carved all of that out of my life and I just have the iMac. I think some people, some of the regular viewers of this channel will probably know at least half the story of why that is. I'm not going to go into it right now. But there were things like, for example, on macOS, and I'm using past tense, on macOS, software updates were few and far between. They weren't particularly annoying. They were just, hey, some new software is available. Do you want to update? And you just go, do it tonight or do it later or whatever. And that was fine. Whereas Windows would always secretly do stuff in the background. And then you go, oh, I need to restart. Cubase is crashed or whatever, and you'd need to restart, hit restart, and it goes, please wait 15 hours while I install this thing that you never asked me to install. The entire experience was just completely different. So I left Windows, went to macOS. Everything was great, everything worked intuitively, and while I fully admit, and I admitted back then as well, that Apple were really restrictive in what they would allow you to do and use. For example, you know, if you wanted to listen to music on your phone at the time, 10 years ago, it had to be iTunes. And if you wanted to listen to music on your Mac, it didn't have to be iTunes, but basically you went with iTunes, and they kind of forced you into this economy. And at the time, while I always admitted, yeah, that's exactly what they do, I also admitted it works for me. It was great. You know, I never had a problem. I could buy a new Apple device, turn it on, and it would just work, and everything was easy. However, over time, that's got worse and worse. I've not so long ago, at the beginning of this year, I upgraded my phone and went from a Samsung S8 to the S20 5G or S20 Plus 5G. Upgrading, I remembered how easy it was buying a new iPhone, because everything was backed up on iTunes, and you'd plug in the new one, it goes ping, hey, do you want to reload as Don Kane's iPhone? Yes, great, come back in 5 minutes, job done. And I remember earlier this year upgrading my phone and thinking, this is a bit faffy. It was just a bit fiddly. It wasn't so smooth and intuitive as I remembered upgrading an iPhone. However, a couple of months ago, I upgraded my partner's iPhone, and she's not tech savvy at all. So I recommend an iPhone to her, the iPhone SE. She had the old one, the new one came out. So I was like, right, just update to that. You know where you are with an iPhone SE. It's quick and easy. That was the most fiddly, faffy upgrade I've ever done on a phone. Because she'd run out of storage, her being not tech savvy, she had run out of storage and had barely ever done any software updates or OS updates, so entirely her fault, let's be honest. But because it had run out of storage, the latest iOS basically wouldn't allow you to back up, or you couldn't back up your phone until you'd updated iOS, but iOS wouldn't update because there wasn't enough storage. So we then had to sign up to iCloud and synchronize all sorts of crap, and it just, you couldn't just plug it into a Mac. And I then tried plugging it into my iMac thinking, I'll forget it, I'll just do it from iTunes. And apparently that's not a thing anymore. And it wouldn't find it on Finder. Finder kept crashing because it was on a previous version of iOS and Finder was on the latest Catalina or whatever. And it just became a nightmare. Again, I'm waffling, I'm going on. But going back to your question, this question is a touch weird. Would you like it if macOS became more like Windows, no more giant updates that break software and VSTs? I don't think that that is necessarily true. And in fact, this is what it leads me to the end of my story-ish. So I converted to Mac then 2 or 3 years ago. I had a project to do some sound design for a VR game, and at the time Oculus Rift was, let's be honest, it wasn't going to work on my Mac Pro or anything Mac, so I bought a gaming PC, not a particularly good one, but it was within the project budget, so fine. Got the PC, got Oculus Rift up and running, and it was Windows 10. And I thought to myself, this is pretty good. And at the time, I was getting more and more annoyed with all the stupid things Apple were doing. I thought to myself, I could probably get used to this with Windows 10. It's smooth, it's good, great. And about 3 weeks later, everything started happening where, you know, you'd get constant requests for permissions or FireWire this Firewall, sorry, not FireWire. It would just, something's trying to attack your firewall, and you're thinking, no, it's not, that's me just plugging in a USB stick. So that quickly made me realize that I think Windows and Mac OS are probably on a par with each other now. And I think it could be interesting to see how that moves when it comes to music production, because actually I think you'll find that there is much better support for Mac OS stuff out there now, because Mac OS has become so popular where everyone owns a MacBook, or it feels like it. I think support for a lot of the software has now, you know, it used to be the devs would just know what they're doing with Windows because it was easier to code, whereas now I think that's probably more true for Mac OS. So I like your question. It's a bit of a weird one, but focusing entirely on VSTs and stuff, I know what you're saying, like with Catalina all of a sudden everything was incompatible. And I'm guessing this question came to you because Apple have announced that they're now going in-house, they're going away from Intel after what, 15 years, and they're now doing their own stuff. I seriously doubt that that's going to have a big impact on us music producers, to be honest. And also the other thing is, and I think it's common sense, is on Mac always just stay one behind. So if I'm on Catalina on this, so I'm not sticking to my own words, but the reason I'm on Catalina is because it was an iMac I bought the end of last year, so I didn't really have much choice but to have the latest OS, whatever it came installed on, and Catalina had just come out. But I will tell you this, I'm on Catalina, and once I'd got past the initial hurdles of everything feeling like it was incompatible and me having to update and upgrade and whatever, once I got past all of that, it's fine. And I don't think if I had any issues, I don't think I've had any software that hasn't worked. It was annoying that Ableton 9 wouldn't install, but that's the only one I had an issue with. I know Ableton 10 will, but I'm not paying the upgrade fee for that because I don't use Ableton enough to warrant it. I guess is the answer to your question. Would I like it if Mac OS became more like Windows? No, because I still find Windows to just be unintuitive and cluttered, very cluttered. Apple is getting worse. I think Mac OS, every version of Mac OS that comes out is more and more like Windows in the little bugs and annoyances, but that's not a good thing. So there we go. Francesco Di Carlo, I really appreciate what you said about exposure, quality control, and royalties. Thank you very much. FanFan87, salut Dom. I'm starting a career as an audio engineer. I already have some regular clients creating my website, printing business cards and such, but not enough to be sustainable in long term. What would be your advice to bring in new clients? What is, in your opinion, the best way to let other people know you exist, especially during our COVID time? We can't count on word of mouth, unfortunately. Have a nice day. You too. That's a difficult question. How do you get exposure in this day and age? I honestly don't know if I know the answer to that. I think as an audio engineer, especially, first of all, you need a website, and that's a given. We all need a website. I'm kind of hesitant to say this, but I think maybe social media is, unfortunately, probably the strongest way of doing it these days. There are websites out there that I've joined, like soundbetter.com. Also, audio.net offer a mixdown option. I don't know if I've ever had a booking through them for mixdowns. I get feedback requests regularly and I enjoy them. I don't know if I've had a mixdown job through them. There's lots of music industry websites and stuff out there, but a lot of them you have to pay a subscription to be able to get work, and I feel like they're already taking a cut of anything you charge. Why are they then charging a subscription on top for you to be able to then get them more commission? And that doesn't make any sense. Is it UK Music Jobs or something is one that I think a lot of people use in the UK. I'm guessing there are probably others around the world. I think it's interesting because social media is probably still the strongest form of communication or marketing. It was Facebook. Apparently it's not so much anymore. Apparently lots of people are deleting their Facebook accounts, lots of millennials. So that's around my age-ish. Apparently we're all deleting Facebook, which I kind of agree with, but at the same time I have a lot of clients and contacts on there, so and I run pages on there, so I don't know. It's a tricky one because I have tried all sorts of things before running Kane Audio, and it's not an easy thing to do. I think your best bet is really pushing for trying to find a couple of solid regular clients that produce quality content. And I think so long as you can match their quality or improve it, then they will always recommend you to others. And if they have a good solid flow of clients, then you're more likely to get a good flow of clients as well. So I guess what I'm trying to suggest is maybe collaboration with companies, not necessarily artists, but companies who maybe have a pool of artists. I think I'm being a bit vague there, but I kind of need to be, because there's a million different options within that spectrum, I guess. Yeah, so there we go. Hopefully that helps. It's not very specific, but that's the best I can do. Francesco Di Carlo again. Can't wait for your album. Thank you very much. High five for you. And Francesco Di Carlo again. And again, I really appreciate the last part of your video as well. Politics is crucial. In a late sense, you do it choosing a product. You do it asking why and what for. You do it even by demanding evidence and arguments against easy opinions and critical supporting. Artists and music always in history have played a key role for ideas in the need for change, and always gave a significant contribution to the well-being of people, always. And this is politics in a true noble sense. Yes, it is. My question about mix. Okay, so before I go any further on that, then yeah, I 100% agree with what you're saying. And I think, you know, as much as I kind of want to move on from the whole politics thing, because last week, I think it got quite deep, didn't it, in the whole politics thing. But I also think that's quite important. And the biggest take home we should all get from that at the minute is that, you know, we need to understand that differing people have differing opinions, and that doesn't make any of them right or wrong. It just makes them different, and let's just accept that for a moment. And at the same time, you know, if you look at bands from the Beatles to Pink Floyd, you know, they are two prime examples. Pink Floyd, you know, The Wall. Look at the politics in all of Pink Floyd's music, really. But if you look at the album The Wall in particular, you know, it's one huge political statement. U2 did a lot of political stuff. The Beatles, I mean, John Lennon in bed and the whole Imagine thing, it couldn't have been more political. So so I think political views is quite important in the arts. And I think art is one way that we're able to express our views and struggles in life. And I think a lot of people's struggles in life come from politics or have solutions or causes within politics as well. So I think they're kind of intertwined for life, really. And I think to try and shut out politics from music would be a wrong move, I think. Well, let's face it, to request people shut out politics from anything is basically fascism, isn't it? So it's probably not a good idea to do that. And I do see a lot where, you know, a friend of mine who's an artist might post something that's somewhat political or whatever, and you'll always get a bunch of comments in there going, oh, stick to the music. And it's like, well, this guy is a human being behind his music. You know, he's equally right, you know, allowed his opinion, as are you. And I don't know. It's a tricky one. My question about mix. Do you use mid-side processing? And when? What do you think of Isotope's Neutron mixing plugins? Cheers. I have not tried Isotope's Neutron mixing plugins, but I will look into that, because big shout out to Isotope. I don't know if anyone remembers, but when I bought this Mac and upgraded and everything and went through the whole Catalina nightmare, Isotope were one of the companies that came out of that fiasco as hands down fantastic company. The guys there helped me out no end. They sorted me right out. So I will forever be their supporter just for that. So Isotope's Neutron, I will look into that. A mixing plugin sounds scary, but they've always done a lot of, I want to say experimental, and I guess technically it comes down to experimental, but they've always been at the edge of morally acceptable, groundbreaking plugins. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it is what it is. But yeah, they've always done some properly groundbreaking plugins. So as for do I use mid-side processing, yes, I do, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Brainworks, and anyone who follows my channel will know that I love Brainworks and all of their plugins. If you head to Plugin Alliance, then you'll find all the Brainworks stuff there. I use BX-V2, which is an EQ, and it's got mid-side processing. And I also use BX-XL, which is multi-band compression, and again with mid-side. I love the fact that they have things like a mono maker built in, so you can basically change from side to mid below certain frequencies. You know, you can really push things and get creative with mid-side stuff there. So yes, I do use it. And as for your question, when? Only ever when I'm already happy with the mix down. It's one of the last things I use. I don't... Okay, sometimes... Right, Okay, here we go. I've just remembered another thing. So yes, I use mid-side processing as well in the writing and production stage, but that's only in experimental stuff with Bitwig, where maybe I want to split a signal off and lace the side in reverb, but the mid in delay, and then converge them back, or just do something weird or add some saturation. So it's really, it's about signal splitting, which is mid-side processing, but probably not what you meant. So yeah, I'll just get that bit out of the way first. But yeah, as for when I use it, other than that, it's one of the last things that I'll do in the chain. So it will be in the mixdown. I would rather get my mix sounding as absolutely tight as I possibly can, and as well balanced, and I will pan a few things left, a few things right. I will get that sort of side balance as best as I can. I might use maybe a stereo expander on something subtle, just a touch here and there, but barely anything, just to get a good central balance. And then when it comes to the last chain of compression, I'll be more inclined to look at things like mid-side. Again, with the Brainworks plugins, you can solo the mid or solo the side, which is a huge advantage, because sometimes if you solo the side, you can just hear some sort of low frequency or mid frequency, but low for sides, some mid frequency saturation, and you can kind of play with that and either boost it if it's a good one, or cut it out, which is generally what I'll do. And so you can just sort of bring in a bit more air and sparkle to a track. So it's kind of a fiddly thing to do with mid-side processing, when it's done right, I think it's a good one. So yeah, and I can see FanFan87 has replied to your comment saying, what would be US hip-hop without politics in the music itself? Rhetorical question, haha. Indeed, yeah, and there we go. So like I mentioned with, you know, Pink Floyd or U2 or the Beatles, or so many great bands, not that I was a fan of the Beatles, but they were still great. Yeah, and exactly the same, yeah, US hip-hop, of course. I mean, that wouldn't even exist without politics being in there, really, because that's what it's all about. And that and actually it was the politics that almost dictates the direction of things like US hip hop and culture in itself. And I think that's probably true around the world, that the politics of the day dictates culture and counterculture. So if you look at in the UK, for example, in the 80s, we had Margaret Thatcher, and the counterculture to that was, you know, the whole ska punk movement from the 70s into the 80s. You know, if you think of scenes of the mines closing down in Britain and the miners' strikes and everything, it's quite often associated with, I don't know, the Clash or something like that, you know. So yeah, so there's I think it's a chicken and egg question. Politics almost creates music or art in general, and the art can be expressive of today's politics. So yeah, I think it's quite important. And there we go, my friends, that is it for today. So just to round up on House Admin, again, thank you very much for everyone that's joined in on the Kickstarter campaign. If you are interested in getting a pre-order basically of my album, whether that be digital or physical, then please get involved. I'll drop a link below, obviously, for the Kickstarter campaign. Aside from that, if you are liking the 5302 vibe in general, then please head to 5302.co.uk/shop, where I will gladly sell you some goodies. I think that is it. If you've made it this far into the video and you would like a high five next week, then comment the word Apple, ironically, because Marques Brownlee Apple responds to your comments. I will open that in a new tab because that sounds good. Yeah, I'm a big fan of, is it MKHB, the YouTube channel, Marcus Brownlee. What a lovely, lovely human being he appears to be. I don't know him. I don't have any affiliation with him other than the fact that he's a tech nerd and is a beautifully spoken and articulate human being, and he seems like a nice guy. So if you like your tech, then please give him a follow. I'm just waffling for the sake of waffling. I don't even know why I'm waffling. I could just walk off right now. Thank you very much, and I will see you all same time next week. Cheers.